Live from the NBC News Radio Broadcasting Studios of KCAA 1050 AM, 102.3 FM, and 106.5 FM, located in beautiful, sunny Southern California, thanks to all of you for tuning in to the Water Zone Radio Show. Good evening, everyone. I'm Chris Davey. But wait, where's Rob? Well, how lucky am I? I have the pleasure of taking over sole possession of the mic tonight, as our co-host Rob Starr is off living it up with his rock star friend Rick Springfield, whose band is playing at the Orange County Fair tonight here in Southern California. For those of you who don't know, Rob is an old-time rock fan and a rock musician with a hit number one single of his own. Maybe one day when he comes back, we can ask him that question and get him to talk about it. All right, but for now, yeah, if I was Rob, I'd say I'd be thinking, boy, do I want to go and do the Water Show Radio Zone with Chris, or do I want to spend the evening rocking out with Rick Springfield? Huh? How many of you think he made the right decision? I'm not sure, but I know what that means for me. I'm in charge of the show tonight, so let's get it going. We have a great show later on tonight with a guest named Larry Dick from the Metropolitan Water District of Orange County. But right now, let's get started with our own Chris Maven, purveyor of Maven's Notebook, and we'll get the show going with some water news. As always, welcome, Chris. How are you doing?
I'm doing great, but man, I was expecting Rob to call in. I mean, do the Water Zone, or, you know, go on stage and rock out with Rick, you know, Rick Springfield. I mean, come on. Why isn't he calling in?
What a choice, right? So I asked him, I said, you know, where are you going to be right at 6 o'clock, right? And he thinks he's going to be in line trying to get into the show. No, Rick, I think, is on at 7 o'clock, so it's at the Orange County Fair.
So he has time.
He has lots of time, huh? So,
well, yeah, but, well, we know where the good stuff is, and it's in the water talk.
Yeah, we do. All right, so I know that there's a lot of great water news this week. I've been watching the Maven's Notebook website all week, and a lot of exciting stuff. What percolates to the top for you this week?
Oh, my word. Are the people in the Central Valley mad about the State Water Board's plan to increase the flows in some of the rivers, particularly the ones on the San Joaquin. The tributaries to the San Joaquin, which is like the Merced, the Stanislaus, and Tuolumne, I think, are the three. And they want to increase the flows during February through June, and they're proposing what they call a percentage of unimpaired flows, which is what water would be in the river if there weren't all the dams and diversions and whatever. And so they're proposing a chunk of, you know, between 40 to 60% of unimpaired flows. Right now, currently in those rivers, it can be down as low as 10 or maybe even 10% or less. And a lot of times what's left in there is ag drainage water, so it's not even, you know, very good quality water. So there, the State Water Board wants more water left in the rivers, and they've specified that water is to go, you know, out the delta and into the San Francisco Bay and ultimately to the ocean. But we should keep in mind that the bay is also a body of water that historically counts on fresh water coming out of the delta. So, and it has its ecosystems there with shrimp and, you know, other fish that depend on those flows. So it's there a lot of people mad about it. And Zinke, the Secretary of the Department of Interior, took a look at some of these reservoirs and went back to Washington and penned a letter to the State Water Board threatening that if they implemented that plan, that the federal government could possibly file suit. So it's all heating up.
That sounds like quite a challenge for those guys. So this isn't directly to recharge any reservoirs downstream or for fish restoration or anything like, you know, great causes like that. Is it a result of what has been essentially two winters with some fairly substantial precip?
Well, not necessarily. It's really the idea is they want to put more water in the rivers for fish, for salmon in particular, that count on water being there. And salmon are cold water fish, so they don't, you know, warm water they can't survive in. They need cold water. And historically, we've had snowpacks and snow melt that provide that cold water even in the hot temperatures of summer in the upper parts of the watershed. So, you know, the water that they want to leave in is to help salmon, to help them find their way out of the delta. And the reason why they're doing this is because the fish stocks are declining.
Yeah.
Salmon are declining. It looks like the delta smelt will be extinct. So, you know, things are not being managed well. So they want to put more water in the rivers. And the people on these rivers that have the water are, besides the fact that they don't want to give up the water because there's an economic interest in that water, they also point out that if you're just pushing more water down the rivers without other types of actions, you know, meaning increasing the habitat, maybe putting it on a floodplain, doing something with that water other than just pushing it out. And we should all, it's hard, well, maybe it's not now that I think of it, but, you know, down here we have our rivers, they're generally in these cement channels. It's not so up in Northern California. They're not in cement channels, but they are levied very extensively. And it's sort of like, the people will point out, it's like if you're in a bathtub and you put more water in the bathtub, you might have some, you know, up and down swimming room, but you haven't really created any more swimming space. You've just made it deeper. And that pushing water down these levee channels without directing it onto a floodplain or making it useful in a, you know, for the species
yeah.
that are, you know, living on that river, they say it's not going to work.
Yeah, so get the same result, essentially.
Yeah, yeah. They're saying it's just going to flow out and it's not going to do any good.
Well, I don't know who who's up the river a little ways, but maybe a benefactor of this next spring will be the whitewater rafting operations up the river, right? So maybe they should start advertising.
Yeah, well, it won't be happening as soon as next year, because, you know, if they vote this thing in, there will undoubtedly be lawsuits, undoubtedly, because it's California water and we have lots of those.
We do. Yeah.
But they're quite bothered by it. Environmental groups, on the other hand, have said it's not enough. But they're not saying too much because it's really getting hammered in the media, you know,
right.
The whole effort. So
right.
That's, you know, and that's ongoing. The State Water Board will be holding a hearing on the 20th and 21st of this month where they will potentially decide to adopt those standards. It will be interesting to see what they do because there is a lot of pushback. I'm not even sure that's a strong enough word.
Yeah.
You know, they're pretty, the farmers and the people on that system were pretty much saying hell no.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah. That might be a too soft a word, you know, even resistance. There's going to be a definite raising of the flag and hiring of the brass band against this one.
Oh, they're planning a rally. And when farmers plan a rally, I wouldn't want to be in Sacramento on that day because they usually bring their tractors and their farm equipment into downtown and just, you know,
yeah.
snarl it up and
yeah.
make a mess, and, you know.
Hey, Chris,
take
on
your
that.
Point, you know.
Yeah, right, yeah. Who's next? So, hey, any news, since we have a little bit of a shortened water news segment this week, what's any new news on the California water fix?
You know, not a whole lot going on. The State Water Board picks up the hearings this week again. I believe they started back today, which is a change in the point of diversion. There's a potential that those hearings might wrap up by the end of August, and then they will have to make their decision on whether they're going to grant the permit. We have no idea what the timeline for that would be. So we'll see where that goes. That's one of many permits that it needs. But really the big question on the tunnels is there is this appropriations bill that has been passed by the House that's sitting now in D.C. waiting for the Senate to take it up. And it contains some riders on it that would pertain to, you know, allowing California Water Fix to go through without any judicial review. And I think that was extended to all water infrastructure projects.
Oh.
And then on top of that, a rider to defund the federal portion of the Clean Water Act implementation in the state, which is to gut this very unpopular State Water Board action that they're talking about taking. So the federal government, if the federal government pulls much of their funding from them, then it will hamstring their efforts to be able to do that. So,
yeah, and I'm sure the Fed is sitting back saying, hey, you know, you guys go ahead with this. There could be potential legal battle, right, over State Water
Plan.
Yeah,
well, when it gets in there, the Senators Feinstein and Harris have come out against these riders, and in the last couple days, the state attorney general has written a letter denouncing them, as has Secretary Laird on behalf of the Brown administration. But once these riders are in there, it can be really hard to get them out. So we will have to see what happens.
I also, we don't talk about wastewater too much on the show, but I read on the notebook, Chris, that EPA is providing, what, just shy of $700 million to the city of San Francisco for wastewater infrastructure upgrades?
Yeah, they had some, I think it's a biodigester that they're going to upgrade, which, you know, helps take some of their waste and turn it into electricity.
Yeah, I'm glad you could say that word. I looked at it on paper, wasn't sure I wanted to attempt saying it.
And also, too, they I think it was today they announced that they're giving some money for the Orange County groundwater replenishment system expansion. So, you know, good money coming out for water reclamation projects.
other newsworthy things you want to cover before we, as we plan our last couple of minutes here?
Oh,
what's interesting?
I don't know. What, lots of stuff going on, as always. You know, groundwater management is another big thing that we'll all be watching to
right.
See how that goes.
Yeah, we tend to take notice of the big things, like all the stuff that's happening in the Oroville Dam, or, you know, with California Water Fix, or what's happening in the Delta Plan and all that stuff. Sometimes we skip some of the smaller things and don't cover them as much.
So we do have a water conference coming up next week at the San Bernardino Water Conference.
That's right. Rob and I will be there.
Hey, so will I.
Yep.
Well, there we go.
That'll be awesome. Chris, just before we go, I don't know if there's anything else you want to cover. And if not, always a pleasure having you on the show. And we'll definitely talk to you next week, yeah?
Oh, absolutely. So.
All right, everybody. Big thanks to Chris Austin, purveyor of Maven's Notebook. Hopefully everybody will stay with us here in just a few minutes. We've got a great cast coming up, as I introduced a little earlier. Keep your radios going, guys. We'll be back in just a few minutes.
Pipe cement that works better than the one you're currently using, is better for you and the environment, and costs the same or less, would you buy it? Well, no-brainer, right? Weldon, the trusted leader in solvent cements for over 60 years, is pleased to introduce a new line of solvent cements that does all that. Introducing the Eco Series line of solvent cements for PVC piping systems. Not only does it work great and set fast, it also has 30% lower solvent emissions and less smelly fumes, a better workplace environment when you're installing pipes. But don't just take our word for it. EcoSeries products are the only solvent cements that are Green Seal certified for environmental innovation for effective performance, improved working conditions, and for use with potable water. Now available in a medium-bodied fast-setting blue formula, 905 Eco, and a regular-bodied fast-setting clear formula, 900 Eco. Pick up a can today from your local distributor and see, smell, and feel the difference, just like Joe Sweat, president of Sunrise Irrigation, did. He said, after using Weldon's 905 Eco, we immediately noticed the application was smooth and there was noticeably less odor than other blue solvent cements on the market. The guys love it. To learn more about Eco solvent cements from Weldon, visit the website at www.weldon.com or call the technical service hotline at 877-477-8327. That's 877-477-8327.
Let's talk drought stress. No one likes burnt plants or grass, especially your customers. So when it's hotter than a tin roof in Tallahassee, what are you gonna do? Water the problem away? Not only does that abuse a vital resource, it's illegal in many cities. Here's a quick and easy solve that won't get you in trouble with Mother Nature or Johnny Law. Applied is a year-round program, Moisture Manager from LESCO supplements regular irrigation by attracting moisture to treated areas, thus making the moisture available to plant roots. This maintains wettability between waterings and rainfall, allowing soil to accept water as it becomes available, and making the water more accessible to the plant roots. Boom! More green, less watering, and a great new reason to see your customers on a recurring basis. With LESCO Moisture Manager and Site 1, high heat is no sweat.
KCAA Loma Linda, 1050 AM, K292 FQ Riverside, and K293 CF Moreno Valley.
All right. Welcome back, everybody, to the Water Zone. Before we go to the next guest, I just want to make a quick announcement, just keying off of what Chris Austin just talked about, the 12th annual San Bernardino Water Conference. So that event is sponsored by the BOA and the County of San Bernardino. It is next Friday, August 10th. It's at the Doubletree Hotel right in Ontario, right next to the Ontario Airport. The event pretty much features a whole bunch of government officials and some premier water experts, along with business leaders in the industry, a lot of community stakeholders. They all come together to discuss and overcome issues and come to some solutions on the many, many California water challenges that are out there. All of you are welcome to attend that. You can reserve your seat or sign up by calling area code 909-945-1884. Again, that is the 12th annual San Bernardino Water Conference. Next Friday, August 10th, the Doubletree Hotel in Ontario near the airport. Call 909-945-1888 for tickets. All right, guys, now on to our next guest. I've had the opportunity to talk to this gentleman one time before. So I introduced him a little earlier. His name is Larry Dick. Larry Dick is the Division 2 director right now for MODOC, Metropolitan Water District of Orange County. Larry was elected to the Municipal Water District of Orange County Board of Directors in November 2000, a long time ago, re-elected again in 2002 and again in 2006. Larry is a senior member of the MODOC's representatives on the actual Metropolitan Board of Directors, where he has served, again, a long time, since 2003. Currently, Larry is the chairman of Metropolitan's Agricultural Industry Relations Committee. He was elected to the Executive Committee as well as serving as a member of the Audit and Ethics Committee, the Engineering and Operations Committee, Legal and Claims Committee, the Real Property and Asset Management Committee, and finally the Water Planning and Stewardship Committee. So, without further ado, let's have a conversation with Mr. Larry Dick.
Okay, we're here with Mr. Larry Dick, who's the Director of Division 2 for MODOC. No.
Good afternoon.
How you doing?
I'm fine. Thank you for asking.
I guess everybody today on our show was doing disclaimers. It must be the new political thing. Everybody said they had a disclaim that we know you, we went to lunch, we did this, we did that.
I think they were keying off of Mr. Rose's presentation.
Yeah, he's the one who started
disclaimer slide.
Well, he's an attorney. He's trained to protect himself.
These are not my comments, or not anyone's.
It just goes on. I mean, you're afraid to talk to anybody today. You know, it's like, are you going to record me? Are you going to speak to me? Did we ever meet before? Very strange. So we'll get back to you here. Again, we appreciate you spending time with us a few minutes, and I know your time is super valuable to us. And again, as a disclaimer, I know your daughter, and I met you years ago.
Well, now you're going downhill from there.
Oh, okay, sorry about that. Mm-hmm. But you do have a nice daughter. So.
Oh, I agree. You want to talk about her? I'll be even more enthusiastic about this opportunity.
Well, you probably want to do the grandkids, too.
That's
the best part. That's the best part. But why don't you tell us a little bit about what you do here, and then you also participate with Metropolitan Water District.
I was on a local water board in Orange County. The Serrano Water Board covers Villa Park and a portion of East Orange. Then in 2000, there was a consolidation between the Municipal Water District of Orange County and what was then the Coastal Municipal Water District. Mm-hmm. This generated an open seat, and I was just so lucky because Ed Roy Sr. had half of the, quote, new Division II, and another gentleman had the other half of the new Division II, Mr. Davenport. Mr. Davenport elected not to run, and then Ed was running for his seat, but it was in a different division at that time. So I was able to secure both of their endorsements. Division II comprised of Villa Park, Orange, Garden Grove.
Did you have Orange Park Acres?
Orange Park Acres.
My sister used to run that.
Well, and you know, it turned out, you know, our business had a warehouse in Garden Grove. My wife had been active in the community in Orange. She had been president of the Assistance League there. I'd served on the Serrano board, so it just seemed like it was tailor-made for me. I ran for the board and was elected in 2000, and been able to defend the seat subsequently.
Excellent.
And plan to do so in November of this year.
Good. Excellent. So coming here today, I'm sure this is not your first time you've been to the Orange County Water Summit. You've probably been coming here since the beginning.
Well, I've not made all of them because, you know, we still have day jobs. Those of us who are directors are not professional water people. Water professionals are deeply appreciated, but we also provide, as directors, a chance to do input on behalf of the ratepayers and to provide whatever oversight we can. So sometimes my day job has gotten in the way, but I've been to most of them. I remember when Wayne Clark got the idea after having been out to see Marion Ashley's similar effort on the Inland Empire.
Yep.
He's now supervisor in Riverside County, I believe it is. But their first ones that they had were so impressive and so educational, it was deemed appropriate that we do the same thing for Orange. Orange County.
Marion's a good guy. I worked with him on the Water Ordinance 852. Helped him write that as well, and he's a good friend, and he's going strong. I appreciate that. What do you get out of coming here? What is the best takeaway that you get when you come here?
You know, as I mentioned, you know, we're dealing with water professionals. Water professionals have societies. Water professionals have continuing education units. We as directors have an opportunity today to meet with other directors and other water professionals, whether it be engineers or planners. And you walk away after having a day like this, and I just got a call from a gentleman from Canada that I met at a water seminar 3 or 4 years ago. He had a question about what was going on in California on desal. And I was able to visit with him for a while, hopefully provided him with some information. And he would never have had that resource had it not been for things like this. There's always something that's timely, whether it's a drought or whether it's a flood. We either have an embarrassment of riches or we have no water.
Right.
We have to talk about planning for both of those. And this is an opportunity to get together, to get a number of people together. Sometimes we do have a collective intellect that's better than thinking about this on your own. Mm-hmm. And because we do have these people gathered under one roof, we're able to get some rather significant speakers. We've gotten the commissioner of the Bureau of Reclamation to come and speak with us mm-hmm. today.
It's awesome.
Brenda Berman is a delightful human being, a gifted speaker, a trained attorney with a deep interest in water. The first commissioner, lady commissioner, and this is her first year in office. She's been willing to give her some of her time to come here. This is a big deal.
Absolutely.
Because the Bureau of Reclamation has a lot to do, as you know, with water in the West. To have her here, to get her ear, to hear her perspective on what they want to do going forward, this is a tremendous asset to the planners. And we had, we had 200 people in the room?
Oh, at least.
Yeah. I'm sorry, I said 200. I saw the count, it was really almost 300.
Yeah.
It's a tremendous opportunity.
Yep. And so you have to hear all the other speakers as well?
Yes, you hear the other speakers as well. And the perspectives that come from one or the other. Senator Manning, he's got some strong feelings about what's the best way to approach a answer to a need.
Right.
John Kupal represents a strong feeling on the best way to answer a need. Somewhere, probably between either side, is where we're going to wind up living and finding the right answer.
Do you think legislators, general managers of water agencies, and directors such as you, how much do they all agree with each other or could agree with each other? I know that everybody comes at a different perspective. As you said, you have a day job, different. Mm-hmm. I don't know what it is, and I'm not asking what it is, but you bring a different perspective from your normal business and your education that you've done. Then you have a general manager who runs a water agency, and that's all he does. Mm-hmm. He has his background. And then you have a legislator mm-hmm. who comes from a different perspective, and he likes the media and all the things. How does that ever get together? Because, I mean, somebody proposes a bill. They did over 800 bills last year. How can you manage 800 things? I said to the last guest that we have, I believe water should be in the top three issues of California, and they should run it like a real business. I would hope they would, where you identify what the, just like our corporation does. We say, this is the problems or this is the issues. Let's put a team together. Let's find out what it is, get the root cause, put in action task in place. And once that's solved, that comes off the list, another one comes up to the top. I don't see that in California. I see things like, hey, we got to build this train. We got to do this. We got to do this. We got to do that. We can't live without water. You can't build new homes. You can't have hospitals. You can't, you know, water is life. And I know they talk about it, but I see 100-year-old infrastructure in place that are they really addressing? What are we going to do about those things? How does people like you, from a director's point of view, working with the water agency and then working with legislatures, how do you turn that around? How do you make that come true instead of worrying about other things, you know, like gas? I know they weren't making as much money because they're making more car efficient cars. So now they want to put a chip in your car, and at the end of the year it totals up how many miles, and then they're going to charge you a fee or tax of 5 cents a mile because they're making up for the other. How do you push your issues up and make sure that they hear that and understand that without water we can't do anything? Is that a loaded question? I don't know.
I was hoping you were going to give me an answer instead of just developing a premise. What we have, fortunately, people on our board and people on our team that are good communicators. We have a member of our board that, Brett Barbie, is president of our board, and his business at one time was a lobbying. So he knows how to tell a story, and he's prepared to be generous with his time, both in Sacramento and in Washington, D.C. We have other directors who are interested to a degree in politics. I mean, we had to stand for office. You know the old story about politics is just show business for ugly people. So sooner or later, you know, there's somebody that loves to tell a story and loves to have people listen to it. We've learned that it's quite often best to try to develop a relationship not only with the legislator, particularly during the term limit years, which have been extended a bit now, and I think for the better. Mm-hmm. But you need to talk to the support team in the legislature. You need to talk to the staffers, because they're the ones that are really going to have the ear of the legislator. Mm-hmm. The legislator needs to trust his team. That man or woman hired that team to be supportive for their best interest. If you can take your story to them and let them see the wisdom in the plans you have for our water future, I think we have a better chance of getting to some of the legislators. Unfortunately, there is such a polarized atmosphere in Sacramento between Republicans and Democrats, you'll hear the argument about, well, there's six good reasons, and the other party says, no, you're nuts, it's not six, it's a half dozen. There's the way they look at things are just so disparate. Yet I'm personally positive that we're going to be able to find a way through it all. I mean, think about it. America has done such wonderful things, carried such burdens, fought such battles, and still accomplished things that they'll be singing songs about 1,000 years from now.
Absolutely.
We put a man on the moon. Mm-hmm. And while you're busy rejoicing about that, also remember we did that before we put wheels on a suitcase.
Mm. Yeah.
Which we had the answer. We had the wheels, we had the suitcase. But we didn't put them together. I think that we probably have the raw equipment to solve the problems we're facing today.
I think
we
if you just have
to put them together.
If you can think about it, it's like when the James Bond movies first came out way back when, and they had the jetpack and the things like that. People thought, oh, that's just fantasy. Well, it's not fantasy. If you can think about it, you can create it. And we used to be what took 10 to 20 years ago to design or develop. Now it's like every 6 months something new comes out.
Yeah, the velocity is increased so much in technology development, all that sort of stuff. It's just it's crazy. I'm just interested to see what sort of consensus building can come out of a meeting like this and be taken back to the offices and the buildings where all these people work, and they actually get material results from it.
And it's all part of the problem that you're talking about. Remember what Brenda Berman said today about Hoover Dam, built with slide rules and shovels, not computers and drones to measure depths of concrete.
Now, T-squares and triangles, right? Not,
Yet, I don't think it would have been built a day faster today. We're looking at projects, whether you like the project or don't like the project. I just told you earlier that I was elected to this board in 2000, appointed to the Met Board in 2003. At that time, Poseidon was talking about doing a desal plant in Huntington Beach. Today, I believe, and I may be in error, but I believe they lack only one permit. Now the problem is they narrowed got closer to the end of the road. The one permit, the elusive last permit, well, some of the other permits they had gotten only lasted for 5 years, and they had to circle back and renew those so they could come back and seek this last permit. Yeah. I've been involved with 18 years in this service of this board, and they have been chasing the holy grail of a desal in Huntington Beach since before I got on the board.
Well, Carlsbad was 17
years. Yeah, how'd the one in Carlsbad do it?
17 years. No, 17 years.
To get it, yeah.
To get it.
And they had, and they wound up doing it in Carlsbad. Now, in Carlsbad, there's a man named Bud Lewis, swell guy, ex-teacher and coach, served in both the city council there and then later on water boards, and was on the San Diego County Water Authority. And we have a strong leader with a vision, with commitment. It sure helps.
Yeah.
Now, we've got strong leaders with vision and commitment in Orange County. But, I mean, Carlsbad was not a fiefdom, but, I mean, Bud Lewis carried a lot of authority. And perhaps authority is the wrong word, but if he said it was snowing in June, people wouldn't even look out the window. They'd just go get a sweater.
Yeah.
I mean, that's the kind of love he had for his community and that his community had for him. They knew he would not take him down to Primrose Path.
Yeah. I know a lot of many of the directors that we work with and met over the years. Good example, Randy Record. He's a farmer. He's a vintner. He's been on the water board with his, actually his father was, even before the predecessor of that. I mean, he has a passion, as you do, to go in and say, look, this is what we need. You look at it from a different perspective, but you bring that other perspective that needs to happen to the agencies. And then from there, they have to take it and try to get the legislatures to latch onto this thing and make it happen. There seems to be lots of red tape. Like you would say, it took 18 years for one, 17 for the other. How do we accelerate that? I know people, you're always going to have, you never can have everybody agreeing. I understand that. It's just like voting for a president or a senator or a mayor. You'll never get 100% of the people to agree on who they like or who they don't like. Same with all these little bills. But how do you accelerate that? How can the water agency say, look, we know we need permits for this and this and this and this, but it's killing us. It's taking so long. And then the cost from when you first decide that this is what it's going to be till the time it really gets done, and we got to revote again. It's like 50 times more of the money. And
to answer that in a one way is to come back to your question about how did Carlsbad do it. Carlsbad had a continuing source of leadership that had a vision and a common vision. There's another location that I'm thinking of where they're looking at a desal facility, but there is a shift in the board of directors. They were quite anxious to do a desal plant 10 years ago. Then some new directors came on board that did not share that vision. That plan was shelved. There's been some change in the makeup of the board. As that composite of the board has changed, there's once again an interest. Just like there's an effort today to do a number of things on the California fix, and I just hope we get a shovel in the ground before the end of the year.
I agree. I don't think I know Brown's trying to push that as fast as he can, but I'm scared that if it doesn't happen by the time he leaves office or anything else, it's just going to go back to square one again.
When you have these issues that we're talking about, you've got a commitment to being fair and open. That provides for much more dialogue. That provides for much more examination, which is good. But there's a price to be paid for the good, and that's a longer period of gestation. But if we're committed, and if we work toward the goal, and if the goal makes sense, and if we get another drought, it will move forward with more alacrity.
Well, we seem to be reactive instead of proactive.
I think that's the case. In order to get critical mass, it almost has to be reactive. We have proactive thinkers currently serving in office, but you need to get support sufficient to get the momentum. And for that, unfortunately, it may take another drought.
Yeah, but I think having motivated, committed, and visionary people in the leadership roles, right, to drive, whether it's desal or whatever it is, right, that's really what helps it, what drives it forward, and what makes it happen. We saw tons of stuff today in all the presenters, right, everything from infrastructure to conservation to climate change and all different sorts of subjects that were talked about. But I think the thing that struck me is when the BLM map came up and it showed, it has all little dots all over the western United States, not just California. And there's all these little dots with all the little tech squares coming off of them saying this project and that project. And you look at California, there was one little tech square for California. That was it.
Yeah.
Hopefully that will change going forward. We have these issues involving
Idaho had 16, right?
Yes.
It's you know, the one thing we do praise is all the water agencies during the drought. You know, people were conserving water before that using smart irrigation controllers. You know, even some of the legislation that was passed that was supposed to be implemented in 2012, where everybody, all sales of new homes or anything that uses a irrigation controller had to be listed as a smart controller. That really never happened. EPA at least picked up and did a water sense thing, which I think was important.
The intent was good. There's no policing. Right? There's no.
Yeah. Now they're talking about this MWLO thing, if you're familiar with that, the Modern Landscape Water Ordinance.
Water Efficient Landscape Ordinance.
The one thing I brought up in a meeting for that is, okay, so you get that and you put it in place as you get a new home. What happens later? Because I've seen a water agency, they presented at the Southern Nevada Water Conference, it was called Smart Irrigation. One water agency was presenting a paper on, hey, we implemented efficient nozzles and controllers, and we did this for a year, but the results were terrible, absolutely terrible. So what we got a hold of the document a couple days before. So I called the guy who did the report, and I said, hey, can I just, because my product and other and my competitors' products were all involved. It wasn't just me; it was a group of, you know, all the top suppliers. I said, so when you started this thing, did you do an audit at the home? They took like 50 or 75 homes. Yeah, we went out, we did an audit, we measured distribution uniformity, we made sure that there was no leaks, we made sure that the spray bodies were straight up, there's, you know, nothing clogged. We showed them, we did the programming of the controller, everything was perfect. Okay, so how did you determine that it was a pure bust? Oh, we monitored them for a year from the water meters. Okay, did you go back to the homes? No. Well, why not? Did they have any leaks? Did they have any clogged nozzles? Did somebody change?
Did the gardener program come in and change the program?
Yeah. And you know, when people who weren't used to smart controllers say, "Hey, you know, I water every 3 days, Monday, Wednesday, and Friday, and it didn't come on today. And today's Wednesday, so something must be wrong with that controller." So they go in and they tweak it, and it turns it on. So it didn't need water. Their sensors told them, "Hey, you don't need to water today," but they never went back. The water agency never went back and checked any of that. It was just, we read the water bills, that's it. Well, that's not a test. That's not a examination of how the technology should work. But we see a lot of that. I think I see more people now, the younger people, as we talked earlier, are getting more in tune to understanding, and they have more of a passion for conservation and using water more efficiently. I think that's a big deal. People didn't like the word conserve because they thought that meant the government or the water agency is going to pound. But the best thing that happened out of that is the great education that all of the water agencies throughout California put out to the outreach programs with the public, because that really helped. The one thing I felt sad about was that the cities and water agencies that were helping to reduce water before that even was pronounced by the governor, you got to do this, they save 20 to 25% of water, but then they want more. And you get to a certain point where you can't get any more unless you turn it off completely.
Well, you know, we have all watched the evolution of these things. You know, the problem is after you have a reduction, and then that becomes the new ceiling, you want a reduction from there.
Right.
And it goes on. And then, as has happened today, or this week, we get the government to write a law that says you shall reach a certain element.
Yeah.
I've got a problem with that. It's just a personal issue with me. I can remember talking about, you know, you're familiar with it, the law was passed, they had to put meters in all the new houses.
Yeah.
But then they didn't say you had to read them. And there were water districts that said, you know, we have an abundance of water. We're not concerned about it. It will cost us more to go out and read the meters than we're able to generate an income. So we'll put them in because that's the federal law, but we're just going to keep sending everybody a blanket bill, and we generate enough money to pay our bills and process our waters and keep them clean and safe, and everybody's happy.
Right.
Well, that was the case. But now, as we know, the laws of unintended circumstances, we have systems that were designed not for today. We have systems that were designed to come on Monday, Wednesday, and Friday, not to sense the moisture in the soil, not to water when it was needed, but when it was time for it.
Yeah.
We have systems that were designed to take care of steadier snowfalls into the Sierras, Mother Nature's savings account for us, water savings account. Summer comes, water melts, or well, snow melts, we need water, snow melts, it comes down. Now Mother Nature is sending, you know, less snow, drier snow, a head fake, we get a warm spell and our savings account is depleted, and then it goes back to being cool again, but then comes summer, our savings account doesn't exist. We need to have more storage. The water fix is only a part of the answer. We need more storage.
Oh, well, look what happens to rains here in Southern California. Where does most of the water go? Out to the ocean, down the drain.
We need more storage. We need to be good stewards of the assets the good Lord or Mother Nature, mm-hmm. depending on your perspective, has provided for us. We need to have a good, effective recycling program. The groundwater replenishment system does a crackerjack job. MET is in the process of evaluating a program out of the city of Carson, working with LA County Sand District. Right. Recycling is the largest river in California.
Yeah. It is.
And we need to make sure we're addressing that.
And it's a whole lot cheaper to produce.
We need to make sure we're doing that. We need to look at desal in the proper areas in order to provide, you know, for the utmost redundancy of safety for enough water so that you can make a cup of coffee in the morning and wash your babies.
Yeah.
I mean, we need to have that core amount of water.
Yeah. Right.
And then from that point forward, we need to worry about providing water. There's two ways of approaching water. One of them is we need to plan for abundance. And we can do that. We know how. But there are those that don't wish to plan for abundance. They wish to provide for the necessities.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know whether that's because it's a fear of environmental impact or whether that's a way of saying I don't want any more growth. But we can't do things like have more people, have more children. We can't open our borders, whether it's to Canada, Mexico, or Iowa, and have people come to California without providing homes and water. And to provide some of the answers we have on homes by not providing permits, by adding to the cost of a new home, by proclaiming that we'll only have solar, that we'll have solar arrays on all of them. This is not answering the need for lower cost housing.
Yeah.
We talked about having the answers. We just haven't put them together yet. I think that sort of thing drives the answers further apart.
Yeah.
When we have some of the issues on water, you know, you've got to be careful what we say because they have ramifications. Today, for example, I don't know whether you heard the unintended consequences about what happens when you don't flow water in those systems.
Yeah.
The safety of this water requires on it moving, not being stagnant in the lines. So if we conserve so much that we have to go out and bleed the lines off in order to keep it safe, we're going to do that because safety is our primary concern. We do a tremendous amount of stuff to make things safe. Go to the Deamer treatment plant. That water is tested routinely as it goes through the plant. That water is held in a reservoir before it's released to the system so that the tests can be returned, that everybody's satisfied that that's healthy, safe water. And only then is it put into the system and delivered.
Okay.
Once it's put in the system and delivered, the retail agency goes around and takes a torch and sterilizes the end of a hose bib, takes a sample, takes it back, takes those samples, takes one of them out, puts in a fouled sample, sends it to the lab, makes sure that the lab is indeed testing this stuff. We test it at the home. We test it when it goes into the system. Safety is important to us.
Mm-hmm.
But when you come up with an unintended consequence, now you've got to readdress that. That takes extra time, takes extra money, takes extra commitment, takes people. And all of this because we did what we all thought was the right thing.
Yeah.
But we have to be careful that we protect our people.
Yeah.
Protect them with a consistent amount of safe water and a consistent amount of reliability for the future to have safe water.
Well put. Any closing comments that you want to have for the day?
I'll turn in my soapbox.
No. That's what we want. We want to understand what people think and let our listeners know what everybody's doing about water, because we think that's one of the, well, it's, I would say it's in the top three of what we need to worry about in this country. What's interesting in Israel, which I'm sure you know, they, you know, Seth was telling us, and the Consul General of Israel was telling us that they, when they do their recycling of water, they're one of their biggest customers are their enemies. They don't go telling everybody that, but they sell it to all their enemies because they need the water.
Well, I've been to Israel. I've been to Jordan. I've spent some time there, not a great deal. But it's amazing. I'm not trying to draw any lines in the sand, so to speak. But go to the Coachella Valley. What a Garden of Eden the Coachella Valley is. You can grow anything there.
Yeah. Yeah.
And the farmers are brilliant. You know, they reverse engineer. They say, okay, peppers. The peppers that come from Mexico, this is the market. The peppers from South America, this is the market. There's 6 weeks right here. We count backwards on the, you know, how long does it take to raise them? That's when we plant peppers. After peppers, we go and we do this. And Israel's the same thing.
Mm-hmm.
They can grow virtually anything over there with water.
Yep.
And they've done a great deal of engineering and hard work to bring water into that desert.
Well, they majority of their source water is desal.
Yes. Yeah. I've been to the desal plant. Right.
So they took the desert and turned it green.
You know, same thing in the Coachella Valley. I remember going through Arizona years ago, driving down and saying, here on the left was a gorgeous golf course and a resort and a strip center, and on the other side of the road, I'm not sure what it was, but it didn't look like paradise. And the only thing that it Tumble didn't have that they had on the other side was water.
Yeah.
And you talk about, you know, it's your fault you asked me the question. If you want to get really frustrated, you go up and look at some of these almond farmers. And I say that because I'm thinking one man in particular. He has a farm, and he's got almond trees that are producing almonds. And they're shipping them around the world, and he's bringing money into the state of California and into the United States. This is not a situation of having to put tariffs on to protect the almond market. We own the almond market.
Yeah.
On the other side of the road, same farm, same farm, same batch of trees are barely hanging on because they are on a federal side of water supply. And he's paying huge amounts of money to put water on that land versus this land. That's just hard for me to understand.
First use, and, first rights.
Yeah. And for someone to come along, well, one's a federal water allocation, the other's a state water allocation.
Yeah.
And it's just, we can be the breadbasket to the world if we get together and work together and figure out the way to make this happen. And we can do it.
Yeah.
Went through a tomato plant up there, tomato packing plant and sauce plant. My goodness, you know, something like 88% I think it is, of the tomatoes, the canned tomatoes in this country come from California. If you decide to go, you know, and visit your family on the East Coast, and you go hunting in Maine, and you decide to mix up a pot of chili and you open some canned tomatoes, you're going to take California water into that stew pot with you because they came from California.
Well, in the tomatoes.
There was one state senator who wanted to bring up a deal where he wanted to ban agriculture in California, which I couldn't believe.
Well, you know, a lot of people still believe in daytime drinking.
Yeah.
You know, we just, dairy, I mean, that's not one of our big strong suits, but we still do $1.6 billion a year in export on dairy.
Well, alfalfa, there's a lot of foreign entities who own land here in California to grow alfalfa and ship it off to the Mideast. That's a big business, but it brings money to California as well.
And, you know, I understand both sides of that coin, but it all kind of goes in together. How can they afford to ship that?
Hmm.
Yeah.
It's because container ships come over here loaded and go back empty.
Yeah.
So that's how they can afford to do that. It's not just a matter of the alfalfa,
right.
It's a matter of the whole equation.
But that's good business, Marcy.
Yeah. I mean, we've got all these things we have to address, for God's sakes.
Well, again, we'd like to thank you for taking your time, and I do appreciate seeing you again.
It's my pleasure, sir. It's nice to be here.